Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's July 27th, 2020, live, to be rebroadcast July 29th, 2020 on 91.7 FM WHUS stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. While the UConn Student Union is closed, we are broadcasting live on Mondays at 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You know what I'm going to do. I have a little bit of coronavirus stuff, and then we'll get back into last week's topic expanded, which was menopause. So stay tuned if you want to hear about menopause, and I'll get through this COVID stuff. I'll breeze through it. So most people breathe through their noses, and it's a good reason because we smell through our noses. Our noses warm and humidify the air we breathe, and they help filter out debris and microorganisms in the air. When you breathe out through your nose, it's also healthier. It naturally improves lung and circulatory function, and it gives your body a chance to reclaim some of the warmth and humidity you'd otherwise exhale into the environment. Unfortunately, just like the nose is better for breathing, the nose also appears to be better at spreading COVID-19. There was a study that was published in the journal Cell, and it mapped locations in the respiratory tract where the COVID-19 virus most quickly invades, multiplies, and spreads. They found the cells that line the nose were significantly more likely to become infected and shed virus compared to the throat or lungs. That means every time you exhale through your nose, they're likely generating a higher concentration of infectious aerosol, if you're in fact infected, than if you're simply breathing out of your mouth. It also means that in order to block that infectious cloud from escaping to infected people, to infect other people, it's just as important to cover your nose with a mask. I would argue it's more important to cover your nose with a mask. Now, when you're wearing a mask properly, you are covering your nose and your mouth. You're not covering just your nose, and you're not just covering your mouth. But if you're going to cover only one, the thing to cover would be your nose and not your mouth, because you're going to infect people more readily with your nose than your mouth. So those of you who are walking around with your mouth covered and not your nose, you might as well not bother. Don't even wear the mask because it's doing nothing. It's really doing nothing. You're actually doing more good by covering your nose and not your mouth, which is weird. But you should just cover the whole thing. Find a mask that's thin and comfortable and keeps your aerosols in and keeps you from getting rid of droplets and aerosols into the environment that's as comfortable as possible for you. I know that's hard to do this time of year because it is very hot out right now. And my solution has been, even though I have lots of lovely cloth masks, the cloth ones that seem to work the best are, they're going to be probably t-shirt cotton and loose, but fitted around the sides, but little baggy over your nose and mouth. Either that or wear the disposable ones. The disposable ones are nice and light and they're meant to catch aerosols. And then just, you know, get a couple of boxes of those disposable ones. And the thing that's neat about the disposable ones is we've been caught in a couple of situations where we were without masks. And what you do with the disposable ones is you take a stack of them, you throw them in your car, and now you have a stack, not just one. And then, you know, when they get yucky, you know, after you wear them for a day, throw them out. And I know that's an environmental issue, but you know what? For these times, I think it's worth to have them around if it means that you're not going to get caught at the store without a mask and that you're not going to be somewhere where you don't have one. All right. So another interesting thought that's generated by this study questions how the SARS-CoV virus even infects people's lungs in the first place if they're hanging around in your nose so much. The researchers suggested, based on their findings, the virus doesn't get to the lungs through your blood or even by marching lower down the respiratory tract. They think it simply jumps to the lungs from infected nasal secretions that a susceptible person aspirates or inhales. Okay, so let's unpack that. So you have nasal secretions in your lungs. You have perhaps, you know, if you're infected, you have COVID in your lungs. It's not that it's not a stationary thing. It's not like you're just sitting there and the viruses migrate from your nose into your lungs. It actually gets there mechanically. That is, when you snort stuff and if you swallow your nasal secretions, some of it you're going to breathe some of it into your lungs, and that's how it gets in. It's actually mechanical. So by that, I think that's why it's a good idea to clean your nose, that if you clean your nose and you also gargle. So the thing to do is if you're using a neti pot or a nasal spray, right after you use that neti pot or nasal spray, it's extremely important to gargle, because when you get that nasal spray up, that antimicrobial disinfectant nasal spray into your nose, you might get some secretions into your throat, which you can then breathe in and get into your lungs. So the thing that you do is you clean your nose and then you gargle immediately. So that's very important to do. And so that's why doing a neti pot is a good idea, because then you're doing a flushing action instead of just instilling antimicrobial substance into your nose. You're actually flushing it out. And then I think if you put something antimicrobial into the nose, that's a good idea too. But as I said, it's very important to gargle immediately after using something to clean your nose. And what do you gargle with? Gargle with something antimicrobial. And you can use products from the drugstore. You can use mouthwashes that come from the health food store that have things like echinacea and neem and oregano oil and other antimicrobial herbs in them. And you can also just use salt water. You can use salt water with a drop of tea tree oil. You can use salt water with a drop of other antimicrobial oils. And you can gargle with that. And it'll clean out a lot of stuff, and your head will feel clearer when you do that. It's really nice. According to the CDC, nearly half of American adults have underlying medical conditions that could put them at risk for a more severe case of COVID-19. And the study of adults in over 3,000 countries found 47% had at least one of the five conditions: COPD, heart disease, chronic kidney disease, diabetes, and obesity. All right, so there you go. So wearing a mask is really important, because, and you want to cover your nose, because you could breathe in other people's aerosols if your nose is uncovered, and if you have COVID, you can transmit it through your nose. And then cleaning your nose, I think, is an intelligent idea. But cleaning your nose is very important to do in tandem with gargling. Remember, and it might be a little unsafe to clean your nose without gargling. I think it's important to get to the back of your throat, because you can feel, if you have, if you get nasal congestion, you can feel that secretions get to the back of your throat. So things that get to the back of your throat need to be gargled. So in these times, I would say at least twice a day is a good idea. Once a day is good, twice a day is better, because the thing with getting up in the morning is you've been lying in bed all night, and things like dust mites. The big thing that gets into your nose overnight is dust mites, because your face is a sitting duck for dust mites, because you shed skin cells, and then you're, I know, right? cells.
It's like, ew.
I know. It is kind of ewy.
It's a little ewy. Yeah,
because the dust mites eat your skin cells. That's their food.
Right. And you ever look at a dust mite? You ever see what they look like?
Yeah, you have to look at them under,
you have to look at them under a microscope.
An electron microscope. Yeah. And they eat your skin cells. And then they poop. And their poop is what you're actually allergic to. You're allergic to the poop. And the poop has protein, DNA, and bacteria in it. So dust mites are actually pooping out extra bacteria that you're then reacting to. And so you're breathing that in all night. And so if you have any kind of an allergy to dust mites, which most people do, you want to get those cleaned out, because they're going to cause chronic inflammation. And then anything else that's in the environment is going to get into your nose. Anything pollen. And if there's any kind of viruses or microorganisms, Ron's pulling up a picture of a dust mite. It has little hairs on it. That's kind of gross.
And it's got all sorts of little legs, and, it looks like
it's
almost
a mite.
Yeah.
Well it's, and it's not an insect. Yeah, it's not an insect. It's I guess it's an arachnid, because
it has an arachnid kind of look.
Because it has eight legs, so it's like a spider. Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah, they're lovely.
Here's one.
She's picking at me.
Yeah, he's got. Just scraped one off your face.
Yeah, okay.
Or maybe 1,000. It's really it's in my fingernail right now.
They're all over
awesome.
The place.
So anyway, while you're lying there overnight, also anything that's in your nose can multiply. So anything that's living there can multiply. So if there's a bacteria, Any kind of bacteria or viruses, it can sit there and multiply because you're just lying there and you're not necessarily blowing your nose or cleaning your nose out. So if you do a good clean first thing in the morning, that's a really good thing. And then at the end of the day, it's really important when you've been out and about in the world and, you know, you can come in contact with people who are infected and infected with all sorts of things. So if you clean your nose and your throat at the end of your day after you're done with your day, that's a good idea. You might want to do a third time. Say if you've been outside and you're allergic to pollens and dust, or, you know, you've just come in from outside, even if it's not the end of the day, it might be a good idea to clean up then. In these times, maybe that's a good idea. You've come in from the store, you're predisposed. Oh, hi, Angie. She's a lovely yoga instructor from Yoga on North. Big shout out to Angie, who's listening today.
And
big
shout Adams out is watching, too.
And also Lucy.
Yeah, Lucy.
Lucy, who is unfortunately... I'm sorry for grossing you out, Lucy, but we're right there with you. We're as grossed out as you are.
We are.
Yeah.
We are.
So,
I was going to say, if you want to take a look at these things online and go to images and check it out, please don't do it before you go to sleep at night. Because it'll alarm you.
It's alarming, yes. Yeah, so, right. So, doing that neti pot, nasal spray, all of those things, like I said, at least twice a day. Once a day is good, twice a day is better. A third time, if you're just coming in from outside and you're going to be spending time indoors, is not a bad idea. I'm a fan. I personally use antimicrobial stuff. And what I'm using right now, I'm using a combination of salt water. And I'm also using, there's a combination antimicrobial that's classically used to clean sinuses. And it comes in a bottle and you can get it at the drugstore. Not supposed to say brands, but it combines thymol and a bunch of other and camphor and some essential oils and actually some benzoin. And so I'm putting that in and I'm doing that 50-50 with a nasal spray that has xylitol, grapefruit seed extract, and salt in it. And you can do that. The xylitol nasal spray is very easy to come by. But you don't have to. You can use straight up salt water. You just need a spray bottle. But I feel like for the extra protection, I'm going to be using something antimicrobial. I'm going to be putting some either tea tree oil or antimicrobial essential oils or that combination I talked about. I just think I'm going to get more cleaning power with that. And I'm doing it at least once a day, if not twice. All right. So let's talk about the travel advisory for a minute now.
Oh.
You basically can't go anywhere.
No. Well, we can. You just can't come back.
Right.
We can go anywhere we want because we're in a state
Connecticut,
very, very clean. So people are openly welcoming us to go to their states.
Yes, but you can't come back.
You can't come back is what the problem is.
Right.
So
if you want to pull up the...
You can come back, but you have to get tested before you can
If you want to pull up the travel advisory, the Connecticut travel advisory, so we can see we need to know what states can we go to and what states can't we go to. I forgot to put the link here. Oh, well. In the meantime, I'm going to tell you that certain national chains are now mandating mask wearing. I didn't realize they weren't, but I guess they definitely are now. One of them is Publix. Yay, Publix. Publix is a grocery store in Florida where I go when I'm at my mom's. Don't know when I'll get to go to my mom's again, because one of the things about going to my mom's, which is in Florida, is I would have to quarantine when I got back here, which means I wouldn't be able to work for 2 weeks. So not going to Florida until that's lifted. Publix, Walgreens, Walmarts, Sam's Club, of course, is the big box version of Walmart. Target and CVS are all mandating masks. You do not go into those stores without wearing a mask or you will be ejected. And that's how that works. All right. So now let me talk. Before I get to menopause, I want to talk about something a little bit fun, which is swimming. And you know, I can talk about why swimming is good for you, but that's not actually where I was going to go. Where I was going to go is that we have an issue right now that the Rhode Island beaches are discouraging us from coming because they want people in Rhode Island to be able to get in. So they're discouraging people from Connecticut and Massachusetts from going, especially on the weekend. And so it's been really hot out, and I'm a Jersey girl. So in New Jersey, where I grew up, it was definitely overall hotter. That had a hotter summer than you have here, because we are like 200 miles south of here. And so everybody swam. I feel like here people are not as likely to desire to swim. I have an example sitting right next to me. And part of your deal with not liking swimming is you don't float well.
Well, you could drown.
See?
Yeah.
See this arm? It's a very...
I'm thin.
Unsubstantial arm, and yet,
I don't have any good flotation devices to keep me above water.
And I do, and my whole family did. And in fact, in Jersey, there's sort of a swimming culture where if you can afford it, you might have a swimming pool in your backyard. And I did growing up in suburbia. If you didn't and you lived inland, you live far enough from the beaches to make it like you couldn't just drop in for an hour, you might belong to a local pool. The other thing we have in New Jersey is these beautiful cedar lakes, and they call them cedar lakes just because the microorganisms and the detritus in the water colors the water this beautiful orange-red color. And, you know, the closer you get to the Pine Barrens, the more you're going to see those. So in South Jersey. And when I was a kid, we belonged to a lake. It was a swim club on a lake that you could get a cabana. And they put in sand there. So there's a little beach. But it was definitely a lake. And if you stood still, the little sunfish would come and nibble on your fingers. It was kind of cute.
Okay.
The nice thing about getting in those lakes is that... it's not salt water. Now, salt water, I love being in salt water too, but if you have a thing about salt water, they're fresh water. Sometimes the lakes will be overgrown, like there'll be plants growing in the water, lilies and, lake grass and things like that. And, there's definitely fish in the water. Usually the ones that are going to come near you are going to be little sunfish. And so if that bothers you, you're not going to be as interested in this. So getting to the beach here, it's a somewhat similar issue. It's not as big a deal to get to the beach because I could drive half an hour and be in Niantic, right?
35, 40 minutes, yeah.
And the thing with Niantic is, I drive down there and I get this gorgeous view of the Sound.
Millstone.
Right.
Yeah.
Precisely.
The nuclear power plant.
I get a nice view of the nuclear power plant. But you know what? It's, as we say in Yiddish, it's BVG, Besser wie Gornischt. Better than nothing.
Okay.
So half an hour I can be in Niantic, and if I'm willing to schlep an hour or so, I could be in Westerly.
There you go.
And then now we have the Rhode Island issue. So that takes a long time. However, if you want to swim inland, that is something you can do. And there are lakes that you can swim in. And I got this idea. I was watching news on TV and they were talking about, hey, here's some places you can go inland swimming. And here's the deal. So the easiest one for us here in Mansfield is to go over to Bicentennial Pond. Mm. Bicentennial Pond has a very small fee. And it is small. I'm not supposed to say what it is, but it has a small fee that's very affordable. And you can go and swim there. And it is lifeguarded, I believe, all day on the weekends and from 3 o'clock on during the week. And so you're not encouraged to swim if the lifeguard is not there. And that's what's very nice is that is lifeguarded, and I think that's what you're paying for because there's actually a lifeguard there. So I went there, and it's a little, as my dad used to say, googie, but it's really not bad. And what I was surprised by is that I was there yesterday, Sunday, and it wasn't very busy. I hung out with a family. There's a lovely woman named Tina that I see at the Mansfield Community Center in the pool, and she was there with her family, so I got to socially distance chat with them. I met her whole family, and they were very nice, and they talked about what a nice place it is and how nice it is. You can go and get a ticket for the summer and just go whenever you want, and it's so easy because we live in town and it's right there. You don't feel bad for going for just an hour. I went for an hour, then I went to the store and got some fizzy water, and picked up a few things at the Price Chopper and then came home. It was great. So that's the nice thing about going to some of the inland places. Other places you can go to Bigelow Hollow State Park. I haven't tried that this year. I might try it at some point because it's pretty nice. The state parks have no fees. And I enjoyed that one. Hopeville Pond is another place you can go. I've never been to Hopeville Pond, and I'm probably going to try that.
Yeah, we used to go there when I was a kid because it was close to Ledyard. So
right.
So my family used to take me up to Hopeville Pond.
And you used to not like to swim in it.
Well, you know, I swam in it, but I just, you know, I don't, like, have a burning desire to get into the water.
No, you don't also like to...
I have two other things. Well, one other thing, definitely, that happens when I get in the water, and that is that I'm freezing when I get in the water. I'm really cold. And the only thing, I discovered something years ago when doing triathlons that, you know, when they finally allowed us to use wetsuits, what a huge difference that makes. It's great. I'm also warm.
Just going to let you know that I got into the water at Bicentennial Pond yesterday. It was like taking a bath. I don't think you would have gotten cold yesterday.
Probably not.
No. I mean, that's the thing. The lakes, that's the other thing. The lakes are very warm. And so the other place that I went, so last week I went to Day Pond Park, which is in Colchester. It has a little roped off. So these lakes, so I'm talking about lakes. If you live on a lake, then of course you have lake access. And I have a friend who lives in Columbia Lake. So if I hook up with him, he can get me into Columbia Lake. But, you know, there's a lot of beautiful lakes that you can't get into because they're private lakes. You have to live in the town or you have to have property on the lake. And he does. So, and Columbia Lake is gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. Mm. It's a big lake and it's very clean because it's so big. And it has something of a current, like there's motion in the lake. Do you know if Columbia Lake is attached to any rivers? Do any rivers run through it?
No.
But it feels like it's down to the river. It's a red. If you're not crazy about, you know, plants in your way, getting that lake grass in your face, you'll enjoy Columbia Lake because it doesn't have a lot of that. But Day Pond Park had a little swimming area. And so some of these places have roped off areas. And so I'm assuming that the state parks do. And Day Pond Park had a smaller roped off area. And what I found was in both cases, it was easy to social distance. There weren't a ton of people there. I think a lot of people haven't figured out that they can go to a lake. So now I'm telling you and you're going to go. That's all right. but you should go because it's nice because it's a way to get swimming. If you like to swim and I'm not necessarily saying work out, which you could also do. But if you just want to get in and get cool because you need a swimming hole, this is an option for you. So I encourage you to go around and check those out. And I'm probably going to check out another one today. I don't know if I'm going to go back to Bicentennial or check out Hopeville. But I'll go to one of them and I'll report back. Because I like swimming, unlike some people.
Well, you know, it's... Yeah. Okay.
All right. So let's go ahead and go back to talking about estrogen. And so I talked about a lot of things that can be helpful for your natural health during your menopause. And I'm going to take a drink.
Ah.
I'm drinking fizzy water with a lemon and a lime.
Oh,
very refreshing.
Because fizzy is good.
Fizzy is good for me.
It is.
Well, I told you that fizzy is a preference. People differ in the way their mouths are structured and what their taste buds are like. And how they perceive the temperature of their mouths. My perception of the temperature of my mouth is that it's hot, which is why I prefer cold drinks. And I also prefer fizzy. And you don't prefer fizzy so much, right?
Not as much. I had some fizzy last night just to see if I still was in agreement that I didn't like it. And I'm still in agreement.
You're not so fizzy. And that means that we are genetically different. Because what I noticed is that my whole family, my sister and my father, hi, Dad up in heaven, and my mother, we all like fizzy. So there's a genetic component to it. Some taste preferences. That's why I'm drinking fizzy. But I have trained myself to really prefer unsweet fizzy. So I really enjoy flavored seltzer and even unflavored seltzer. And then I squeeze some lemon or lime in it. And then, you know, I have a history of kidney stones. So I'm getting the citric acid in, which is going to help me have less likelihood of getting another kidney stone.
Lucy says fizzy, yes.
Yeah, I'm with Lucy. I miss Lucy. I wish I could see Lucy. Next, when I go to Florida, I'm going to see Lucy. All right. So let's talk about menopause. Last week we talked about natural medicine. By the way, the evening primrose is starting to bloom. And it always makes me sad because it means the summer is on its way out.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, it can't be. It's just started.
I wish it could be summer forever, right?
Yeah.
It could be if I was in Florida, but I'm not going to Florida. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the evening primrose is starting to bloom. It's probably about a waist-high plant. It makes these lovely yellow flowers that look like a little cup at the top. And one way to identify it as well is if you touch the leaf and you rub the leaf between your hand, it feels oily. So evening primrose, as we talked about last week, evening primrose oil is something that you can use to help you with your hot flashes. And, you know, people use varying doses. You might need as little as 500 milligrams and you might need as much as 3,000 milligrams. And it depends. All right. So anyway, let's talk about hormone replacement. To start with. So there's three forms of estrogen in the body, and they are estrone, which is E1, estradiol, which is E2, and estriol, which is E3. E1 and E2 are about 10 times as potent as E1. All of the hormones are produced by the ovaries, and E2, which is estradiol, progesterone and testosterone all decline when you start your menopause. Since overall estrogen does not decline at the beginning of menopause, it's thought that the symptoms arise because of decreased progesterone or a change in the relationship between estrogen and progesterone. So that's how people feel. So let's talk about some basic diet principles before we get into whether you should take hormone replacement therapy. The big thing is you want to have good enterohepatic circulation. So what the heck does that mean? Entero means your intestines. Hepatic means your liver. So you want good circulation going through your liver and your intestines. And that means that liver metabolites are effectively excreted into your bile and sent to your colon for release in your stool. So you want a diet that maintains a healthy gut environment and is high in phytoestrogens. Those are plant compounds that have a somewhat similar structure to estrogen and can bond to your estrogen receptors. You want your diet to support your bone health and promote daily elimination. So if you go and poop every day, that's a good thing. So what does that look like? You're going to be so shocked when you hear what this diet sounds like. It would include eating lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. Who knew? Whole grains, if you tolerate grains well. Not everybody does. And, you know, people have, I would say that grains should be the thing you eat the least of, if you eat them at all. And you don't have to eat grains. But if you're going to eat them, whole grains are the best way to go. Beans, again, beans are something that if you tolerate them, beans and soy both. Not everybody tolerates beans and soy well, but if you do tolerate them, they definitely have phytoestrogens in them that can bond to your estrogen receptors, give them some stimulation, and reduce your symptoms. Cold water ocean fish, if you like fish. If you don't like fish, you can find a way to eat fish oil that works for you. But eating fish, cold water ocean fish, that's going to be the stuff that has a lot of essential fatty acids in it. What are you finding?
I just, right here, Craig says, no on fizzy gives me gas.
Oh, well, that's true. Fizzy can give you gas. That's true. Because when you, on the one hand, when you drink it, some of the, because there's dissolved carbonic acid in it and carbon dioxide. So that's why when you drink it, you kind of burp it out. And if you drink enough soda, it's true. It'll give you gas at the other end if you don't absorb the carbon dioxide into your body, if you don't metabolize it. I don't have a big problem with that, but not everybody does. But some people are going to have that issue if you drink. That is one of the ways that people have gas problems, if they drink a lot of soda. So I wonder what our dear leader is like, Mr. Diet Coke there.
Yeah, oh God.
Yeah, so I'm not going to go there. All right, so cold water ocean fish, we're talking your salmon, your swordfish, your tuna, your halibut. You're talking about bigger fish that have a lot of essential fatty acids in them. And if you're worried about mercury, a good way to do that is to go to a really knowledgeable fishmonger, who knows how to catch the right fish that are not too big, not so big that they're going to hyperconcentrate mercury, and also to eat foods that contain selenium to help you to excrete the mercury so that you're making proper glutathione, and N-acetylcysteine and glutathione are things that you can take to help you excrete extra heavy metals. And so it might be a good idea to limit the really large fish to once a week. So things like swordfish and tuna, you maybe only want to have once a week. And the smaller white fish, now Ron and I like to eat haddock and flounder. The only problem with haddock and flounder is they don't have as much in the way of essential fatty acids. A really good compromise is salmon, because salmon spends a lot of its life in fresh water, so it doesn't tend to bioaccumulate heavy metals. We should eat some salmon.
Okay, we could probably do some salmon.
Salmon this week. Maybe we might have some salmon in the freezer.
We definitely have the ability to get some salmon. Yes.
We'll do the salmon thing.
Yeah.
And, trout is another thing. I really love trout, whether it's the rainbow trout or the freshwater trout. But if you get salmon or you get rainbow trout, or any of the fish that are orange, the reason they're orange is because they have a tremendous antioxidant in them called astaxanthin. And astaxanthin is it's a great antioxidant. It helps with a lot of things. It helps with oxidative stress in all kinds of ways. So it's going to help your cardiovascular health. And I was talking to Bill, who was watching recently, about how astaxanthin can improve your exercise recovery. So I've been taking some astaxanthin. Astaxanthin is such a powerful antioxidant. Now, I'm not saying don't wear sunscreen, but astaxanthin can help to protect you from getting a bad sunburn because it is that great of an antioxidant. So I'm taking, this summer, I'm taking some astaxanthin. Your diet should have fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains if you tolerate them, beans and soy if you tolerate them. Beans and soy definitely have phytoestrogens, especially soy, cold water ocean fish, and avoid foods that have too much sugar, too much flour, hydrogenated fats.
Ew.
Saturated fats. This says saturated fats. I don't know if I agree with that, because good quality saturated fats are going to be helpful for you. And I do encourage monounsaturated fats like virgin coconut oil and extra virgin olive oil and the monounsaturates in nuts and seeds. Too much caffeine and alcohol are going to tax your liver and make it so that you can't manage your hormones as well. And and refined sugar. I find that if I eat a feed of sugar, like if I've had a meal and then I have dessert, I feel that I might, if I don't actually get a hot flash, I will actually feel warm after I eat the sugar. So if you eat a lot of sweets and you're having a lot of hot flashes, you might want to take a look at that. And I've talked to other women who say that they eat dessert, they eat sweets, they get hot flashes afterwards. And on nights that they don't, that they have a better night and have less night sweats. Exercise is going to be really helpful. I will tell you that it only helps so much in my experience, because I cannot be accused of not exercising. I, in fact, exercised this morning already. I'm getting exercise probably 6 days a week. And I still get hot flashes. So it only helps so much. I would probably be getting worse hot flashes, I'm assuming, if I didn't exercise. I'm wondering if I would get more hot flashes because I don't get a lot of hot flashes during the day unless I get hyped up and excited. And the time that I tend to get the hot flashes during the day is when I'm with a patient, because I get, excited about talking whatever I'm talking about. If I'm calm during the day, I don't tend to get them. Then the time that I tend to get them is at night. But exercise is really important because it's going to help your enterohepatic circulation. Weight-bearing exercise is important for strengthening your muscles and bones, because you can be more prone to getting weaker bones and osteoporosis and osteopenia. And doing some combination of weight-bearing and some kind of cardio is best. Which one is the best for you? It's the one you'll do. Whatever you will do is the best exercise for you. So if you want to walk, that's great. If you want to swim, if you want to do videos on, get a streaming service and do videos at home, that's great. If you want to go to the gym, there are ways to go to the gym safely at this time. I love yoga. Yoga is wonderful. I miss yoga. I haven't done it so much lately. So getting exercise is super important. And then, of course, we treat your symptoms. Hot flashes is the number one symptom that brings women into the doctor's office. This and other symptoms such as emotional effects, being depressed or anxious. Vaginal dryness and thinning will bring women in because it affects their sexual function. Urinary dysfunction, if you're running to the bathroom all the time, or if you're having stress incontinence, that's going to bring women in. Irregular bleeding will also bring women in. That's not as common, but it happens. And you have to treat whatever else is going on where you have if you have heart disease, if you have osteoporosis, joint pain, any digestive stuff. We can help with all of those things. So we talked about a lot of these supplements last week. So I think I'm going to jump down to liver cleansing herbs because I don't know if I talked about that. And all right, so liver, specific herbs to help to take care of your liver are a good idea because the liver is going to help your metabolism. And if your metabolism is working well, then you're going to be able to manage your hormones better. So classic ones are dandelion root. You can drink dandelion root tea or you can get dandelion root in other blends. Yellow dock is a great herb. Yellow dock has some phytoestrogens in it, so it can be helpful that way. And so does burdock. And burdock is a root that you can get and you can chop it up and put it in a stir fry or a soup. So you don't just have to drink it as a tea. You can put it in a soup that has lots of other nice things in it. Nervine herbs are really important and they can be really nice and calming to the nervous system. You can use St. John's wort. Be careful of St. John's wort in the summer because if you use too much of it, it makes you photosensitive. You can get a sunburn if you take too much St. John's wort. So chamomile, oat straw, skullcap. I really like linden. Linden is anti-inflammatory as well as a nervine. And linden is an herb that we like to use for helping to lower blood pressure, people who are sort of high ampers. I really like linden. Lavender is a wonderful nervine. I also, you know, if people have anxiety issues, I like to recommend theanine. And theanine is it's an amino acid that is in tea, in the tea plant, Camellia sinensis. So, you know, the herb that makes black tea, green tea, white tea, it's all the same herb, Camellia sinensis, and it has a wonderful compound in it called theanine. And that's why some people find if they like to have their caffeine, they do better with tea because tea has this calming neurotransmitter in it. This calming amino acid in it. And so theanine, I find for myself that if I want some caffeine, if I drink tea, I do better with it than I do with coffee in general. I also just, if you like a little bit of caffeine, if you exercise regularly, I find that on days that I exercise, I have a higher caffeine tolerance because I've ramped up my, metabolism. So I can enjoy a little bit more caffeine on those days. And that on days I don't exercise or I exercise very lightly, I really can't. And to the point where it could make it so I don't sleep. Now, I had some caffeine yesterday and last night when Ron was about to feed me supper, he was calling for me and there was no Fran to be had.
No, Fran was out for the evening, but not because I woke her up and made her eat.
Isn't that, but the thing was, what did I do yesterday? You know, I'd done a hard bike ride on Saturday. I did a mellow bike ride yesterday. It's been very hot. And then I went to the Bicentennial Pond and I went swimming.
Yeah.
And so I did some running. So, you know, by the end of the day, I was a little cooked.
Yeah.
You know, I slept good.
Felt good, didn't it?
It was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I had to get up and watch Haven.
Yeah.
So anyway, one of the things you want to do is have herbs that regulate your blood sugar because your blood sugar is a little bit harder to regulate. When you have good estrogen and progesterone function, it helps you regulate your blood sugar better. And you know how somebody last week asked me about, can we talk about love handles? And I'm like, yeah, I can talk to you about the love handles. And I can also talk to you about all my ladies say to me, and I gain weight right here. Right here being the abdomen, and you tend to lose your hourglass shape, and you tend to gain weight in your belly, and that's a very cortisol, blood sugar oriented weight gain. And that does happen because it's harder to regulate your blood sugar and you're more sensitive to cortisol because you have less estrogen and progesterone. And so you have this unfortunate cycle where you have more cortisol sensitivity and less estrogen and progesterone. And cortisol anyway is suppressive to estrogen and progesterone. So one of the best things you can do in your menopause, part of menopause and weight gain, and part of menopause and everything, wait for it, is rest.
Yeah.
So rest is a thing that helps your menopause. It will help, and it helps your blood sugar regulation very simply because the less cortisol you have, you know, when you're resting, you're not going to be in as high cortisol status. You're not going to be putting as much. So cortisol's job is to look, run around your body, find stuff to break down and put in, to break down, turn into sugar to put into your blood so you can run away from the bear. So the more cortisol you have around, the harder it is to lose weight. So part of fat loss, regardless of what diet you're doing and regardless of the time in your life, is rest. If you're going all the time, it's going to be harder to lose weight. So if you want to take an afternoon and do nothing and lay about, that's helping you lose weight. So a combination of exercise and good rest is a good, helpful lifestyle thing to help you with your weight. That said, doing a diet that's going to reduce your blood sugar is not a bad idea, which is why you want to limit your grains and eat mostly produce and clean protein and good healthy fats. And that's how your diet's going to look. The berries are amazing right now. You've been hearing Ron and I talk about the berries. The blackberries are growing like crazy in our yards right now. And you can go, we have a few blueberries. I think the raspberries are about done, but the blackberries are really coming in now. So if you have a place where you can pick blackberries, that's great. And if you are able to go, there are farms that have blueberries for you to pick. And that's a wonderful thing to do. Or you can get organic blueberries at the store. They're terrific in season. They're growing here now. And things that are growing here now are good things to eat. And when you eat berries, you're eating a lot of the skin. And the skin has anthocyanins in it, which help to regulate your blood sugar and are also fabulous antioxidants. So regulating your blood sugar is part of helping your menopause. If you can regulate it, you're going to have better fat loss and, you know, you're going to be at a weight that you're happier at. All right. So let's talk about topical applications. One of the things that happens in your menopause is vaginal dryness. And vaginal dryness can affect you in terms of simply your comfort during intercourse or during sex play. And it can also, if people are really uncomfortable just sitting around or walking, they can chafe. It can be that bad. And so there are combinations that you can apply locally. One of the nice things about estrogens, when you apply estrogens to your vulvar tissue, even if you use estradiol, as we said, it's 10 times more potent than estriol. But if you go to the MD and you get a prescription for a topical cream, you're probably going to be getting estradiol. You might also get conjugated estrogens, which I don't prefer because they're not the natural estrogens that occur in our bodies. They're the natural estrogens that occur in horses' bodies. But those are given. I prefer it. If you go to the doctor and you get a prescription, in my opinion, it's better to get estradiol. As naturopaths, we can use topical estriol. Estriol can be gotten over the counter. You can get it at the health food store and you can get it from your friendly local naturopath. So the neat thing about even estradiol, it doesn't have a super long half-life. Having said that, I have seen women use both estradiol and estriol topically on their vulva and get high estrogen symptoms. And the high estrogen symptoms, for example, would be they get sore breasts. If you're getting sore breasts, that means you, from using a topical application on your vulva, that means you're absorbing the estrogen. It's getting into your bloodstream and it's affecting your breast tissue. And so either you use a lower dose. If it's happening with estradiol, then you might want to switch to estriol. Estriol has a very short half-life. And we encourage people to use it even if you've had reproductive cancer. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. But estriol should, it acts so locally and its half-life is so short that it's not going to appreciably get it into your bloodstream. And it can give you a lot more vaginal comfort. You can get creams that you can apply topically. Sometimes they'll be applied with an applicator. You can apply them with your finger. You can also get suppositories in the shape of ovals or cubes. And sometimes you have to use them every day, and sometimes you can use them a couple times a week. What I usually do, if a woman comes in and she's got a sore vulva and she wants to do some healing, I'll say, go ahead and use these for a week. And then after a week, you might only need to use it twice a week. And a lot of women, that's what they wind up doing, and it works very nicely. Topically, during menopause, you can have suppositories that have estrogen in them, either estriol or estradiol, that also have DHEA in them. So DHEA is a hormone that comes from your adrenals that goes down when you're in menopause. And if you apply it locally, it can help with your sex drive, and it can help with your energy and your sex drive if you take it internally. And I actually take DHEA. That's one of the things that I take. And if you apply it topically, it can help with your sex drive. You can also get a prescription. If you get a friendly doctor who will prescribe natural hormone replacement therapy, you can get topical applications of testosterone and you apply it in very small amounts and locally. And it also can help with your sex drive. And so it can just make you feel better. And if you enjoy sex, sex is a great way to help you to enjoy your menopause more. Hopefully you can either be with yourself or you can have a great partner. And just remember that sexual activity.
Is that me?
Sexual activity is a great way to help you to experience your menopause. And the other thing about sex is it's kind of a move it or lose it phenomenon, that one of the ways to keep your tissues active and healthy is to use them. So if you want to keep having sex, you should keep having sex. And so find ways to make sex comfortable so that you can enjoy it, and then you will perpetuate itself and continue to enjoy it. All right. So homeopathy can be helpful. There are various homeopathic remedies that can be helpful during menopause. I like sepia, for example, for that. I love you, honey, but get away from me. I want to be alone. If you're feeling sad and weepy and hot and need comfort, but you're also capricious, you might want to take some pulsatilla. If you're getting amazing hot flashes, like you feel like you're on fire and you have very red skin and you're really, really hot all of a sudden, belladonna can be helpful for that. If you're hot, industrious, angry, and itchy, and you are the caregiver of the family, you might want to take homeopathic apis, which comes from bees. So, and then if you feel much better after you have a hot flash, if you're like, oh my God, if only I could have a hot flash, I would feel better. And then you have that rush of heat and you release it and you feel better, then you might need Lachesis. And also if you're having outbursts of emotional energy, Lachesis can help. If you're just generally hot and itchy, but you feel so much better with cold drinks and cold applications and cold water, and otherwise your mood isn't too bad, sulfur might be helpful for you. So talk to your friendly local homeopathic practitioner, whether it's a naturopath or other type of practitioner, and they can help you with the best homeopathic remedy for you. Physical medicine, really important, because you're going to get achier when you're my age. You don't have as much estrogen and progesterone rebuilding your tissues. And so you're going to need some help there. And, you know, this is where I recommend taking a collagen supplement or esterified fatty acids, fish oil, things to keep your joints supple and present. Glucosamine can be helpful for some people. I'm more of a fan of collagen these days than I am of glucosamine. And you can take collagen supplements regularly, and they can be really helpful. If you take collagen along with an anti-inflammatory, so collagen along with flavocoxids or collagen with curcumin and fish oil, that can be really helpful for keeping your joints healthy. And when I say joints, I also mean the discs in your back. And get yourself some physical medicine, whether it's acupuncture, massage, chiropractic. Lately, I haven't been getting massage, but I use my foam roller, but I do get regular acupuncture and chiropractic, because they're easy to do. I think in the time of COVID, if you get acupuncture, the practitioner is they put the needles in you and then they're not in the room with you and you can just lie there in peace and you get a nice relaxing you get to relax for a while, and it's very nice. And then, you know, chiropractic, I have a great chiropractor, and my chiropractor really helps to keep my body in alignment, especially because I use it so much. And I think that you've heard me say this before, but in terms of physical medicine, people think of using physical medicine only when they need it and, or not at all, that they should just go to the doctor and get a pill. I think that everybody needs physical medicine all the time. That is part, you know, you go to the doctor to get a checkup. You should go to the massage therapist to get massage regularly, because you're in the world, you're using your body. Hands-on therapy is extremely helpful, whether it's massage, physical therapy, acupuncture, or chiropractic. They're all helpful. All right. So, as I said, body, mind, getting counseling can be helpful. Making sure that you're as happy as you can possibly be at this time in your life is extremely important. You're not always going to, you're not always going to be able to, be as happy as you can be. As your hormones go down, you're going to find that there are days that you're down and you don't even know why. Right now we're in the time of COVID. So if you have any kind of empathy at all, it can be very difficult to be uplifted right now. So getting counseling is a great thing. Making sure that you get adequate rest. Make sure that you have some fun in your life. And make sure you can get to be in a situation where you're happier and you can relax. Is very important. And just realize that it's going to be a little bit harder. It's a little bit more of a challenge to stay buoyant at this time in your life just because of how the hormones work. And yet it is possible to do. So giving yourself good care is going to help you. So the big question is, should you do hormone replacement therapy? And the answer is, and no. yeah. So
that's a professional answer.
That is a professional answer. It isn't for everybody. If you've had a history of reproductive cancer, you might want to stay away from it, and most women do if they have. The question is, it's not clear, because the thing is, when you have menopause for a reason, and that's that the intention is that you get to a certain point in your life and you're not supposed to be overexposed to estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Having said that, some women find it so difficult to get through their menopause that the only thing that helps them is hormones. So at that point, of course, you use the lowest effective dose of whatever you use. Sometimes women find that if they just use progesterone, that's all they need, because progesterone is the first hormone to tank, because you're not ovulating anymore, so you're not having that follicle making you progesterone. So some women just use progesterone and they're fine, and you can use progesterone topically as a cream. You can use a sublingual oil, or you can take pills. The neat thing about using a cream or a sublingual oil is that you can take a much lower dose, and you don't have it gets into your body without having to go through the first liver pass. And so first liver pass means when you take a drug, it gets into your stomach and it gets into your enterohepatic circulation. That is, it goes through your digestive system and it's absorbed, and it goes through the liver and it's broken down. And so, as it's broken down, now it has a bunch of metabolites, and then you're dealing with the lower levels of metabolites. But that big dose has to get through the liver first. So that can be taxing to the liver. If you do a cream or a sublingual oil where the compound is getting right into your bloodstream, now it's right in your blood and you don't have to deal with the first liver pass going through the digestive system. So you're not exposing the liver to that bigger dose. So that can be very helpful. Some women find that really to get rid of the hot flashes, they need to do some kind of estrogen. Some women can handle just using estriol. And estriol, as we said, it's much less potent than estrone and estradiol. And it is also the most prolific of the estrogens in your body. And why would that be? It's because we don't want your estrogen receptors to be overstimulated. Estrogen is a proliferative hormone, which means it causes stuff to grow. And you don't want excessive growth. If you have too much growth, that's what can lead to cancer. And so the other thing is that there was a study that was done that showed that women... the heart and estrogen and progestin replacement study concluded there was no significant difference in the incidence of non-fatal or fatal MI between groups taking HRT and control groups. And the HRT group also showed a greater risk of thromboembolic disorders as well as gallstones. So that's a reason not to do it. However, there was a study that showed that women who take estrogen and take natural progesterone along with it, their risk, there's an increased risk of getting reproductive cancer and cardiovascular disease when you take estrogens. If you take natural progesterone along with it, it reduces it back to the risk of the general population, which doesn't mean there's no risk. It means that if you're going to take estrogen, it's a really good idea to take natural progesterone too. Why? Because natural progesterone is anti-proliferative. It calms down the effect of estrogen. It's a moderator. It's like a similar relationship between calcium and magnesium. Calcium is a proliferative mineral and magnesium is a moderating mineral. And thyroid hormone, T4, is much less potent than T3, and it gets converted to T3, and T3 is much more potent, but you predominantly have T4 in your body so that your cells are not overstimulated. So it's interesting how this theme happens in the in your body like that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, and so if you're going to take natural hormone replacement therapy, you have to talk to a practitioner. It's a good idea to do that. And you have to decide what is your cancer risk based on your family history and your own personal history. What's your cardiovascular risk? And if you have cardiovascular risk, the thing you want to do is take progesterone along with whatever you take. And as we said, hormones can be taken, they can be taken orally in pills. They can be taken topically in creams. They can be taken topically on the vulva itself. And they can be taken sublingually, which is not exactly the same as oral because you're taking an oil that sits under your tongue and helps and can get into your body directly that way. All right. So that's some more information about menopause for you. So I hope that was helpful. And having said that, I think it's time to go. So I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to try to go swimming somewhere else today, and I'll report back where I go and what I wind up doing. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.